From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. Less than 24 hours after Jacob Zuma's late-night resignation, South Africa has a new president. Cyril Ramaphosa, a successful businessman and longtime member of the African National Congress, who was instrumental in the push to force Zuma to resign. VOA's Anita Powell is in South Africa, saying the atmosphere in the parliament was upbeat when Ramaphosa was nominated and accepted.
We haven't seen that in a while, especially not during the very, very combative Zuma years. So it was there was a lot of pomp, and Cyril Ramaphosa was the only nominee. He was nominated by his party, the African National Congress, and it did not need to go to a vote because he was the only nominee. It was seconded, and the Chief Justice said, okay, fine, it's going to be Cyril Ramaphosa. He's the new president-elect of South Africa.
VOA's Anita Powell in Johannesburg. Ethiopia's prime minister stepping down in what he says is an effort to advance reforms aimed at easing the country's political unrest. Haile Mariam Desalegn submitted his resignation as both prime minister and chairman of the ruling coalition, hoping parliament would accept it. Ethiopia has been going through political unrest since a wave of anti-government protests in 2016, prompting officials to declare a state of emergency. Pakistan criticizing a new U.S. report saying the country's weapons are a continued threat to regional American interest. Foreign Ministry spokesman criticized pointed to India as having the fastest-growing stockpile of nuclear weapons. Pakistani officials maintain the nation's short-range nuclear capability is only for protection. This is VOA News. The number of civilians killed and wounded in the war in Afghanistan declined last year, but the number of deaths from airstrikes has increased. Tadamichi Yamamoto is the United Nations Special Representative of the Secretary General for Afghanistan.
When we document these appalling civilian casualty figures, it hurts because it counters the best interest of this country and undermines efforts serving the people of Afghanistan. Each of these figures represents a hope crushed for a better future.
Afghanistan's armed conflict in 2017 caused a number of total of 10,453 civilian casualties, including 3,438 deaths. World Health Organization warning healthy pregnant women are undergoing unnecessary medical interventions. Lisa Schlein reporting now from the WHO in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports most of the estimated 140 million annual births occur without complications. Yet it says over the past 20 years, there's been a significant rise in medical interventions previously used to avoid risks. These include oxytocin infusion to speed up labor and cesarean sections. WHO says health providers tend to intervene medically when the rate of labor appears to be slower than what is considered normal. This is based on a long-held benchmark for cervical dilation to occur at a rate of 1 centimeter per hour. WHO's new guidelines include 56 evidence-based recommendations on best care for mother and baby during labor and immediately after. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A troubled 19-year-old man accused of the latest mass shooting in the United States was ordered held without bond. During a brief court appearance, Nicholas Cruz charged with 17 counts of premeditated murder. President Trump spoke to the nation about the school shooting.
We are all joined together as one American family, and your suffering is our burden also. No child, no teacher should ever be in danger in an American school. No parent should ever have to fear for their sons and daughters when they kiss them goodbye in the morning.
After previous mass shootings in the United States, some lawmakers have called for tightening the country's gun control laws. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com. And we're always available on the VOA mobile app. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn has announced he will resign.
He has expressed his willingness to resign. That doesn't mean that he automatically resigns. According to the procedure, his resignation will be dealt with by the concerned party authority and the government.
Jerry Lencho, Ethiopia's information minister, will get an expert take on 3 years of continuing anti-government protests in Ethiopia. The president of Djibouti's leading opposition party will join us in our Washington studio to discuss the upcoming February 23rd parliamentary elections. And South Africa has a new president, Cyril Ramaphosa.
The first task he will have to prioritize is that of dismantling the parasitic networks that are surrounding our state entities and bringing to an end the problem of state capture and other forms of corruption.
Alex Mesheho is the spokesman for the Communist Party of South Africa. The government of Uganda has launched an inquiry into alleged mismanagement of funds meant for refugees. And a new study finds a partial dose of yellow fever vaccine to be effective. The stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn has announced he will resign in what he says is an effort to advance reforms aimed at easing the country's three-year anti-government protests. Speaking on state television on Thursday, Desalegn said he has submitted his letter of resignation as both Prime Minister and Chairman of the ruling Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, the EPRDF, which has ruled Ethiopia for almost three decades. The Prime Minister said he is stepping down to be part of the solution and for the success of the reforms and the solution his government has put in place. Information Minister Jerry Lencho says the Prime Minister's announcement does not mean he is automatically stepping down.
It's true all that His Excellency, the Prime Minister of the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, has submitted resignation and in due process. We will expect that the ruling party will endorse the resignation and accordingly nominate the chairperson for the ruling party, then the Prime Minister in the near future.
Does that mean, by the way, a resignation of the entire cabinet of Haile Mariam Desalegn?
No, only the Prime Minister has submitted resignation. That doesn't mean that the whole cabinet will resign. According to the constitution and the law of the land, after the ruling party nominates the chairperson of the ruling party, then the parliament appoints the prime minister. Then after that, the new prime minister may come up with a different portfolio or else may continue with the current cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
That means we'll wait and see.
Mm-hmm. The prime minister's request has been approved by the SEPDM, which is Southern Ethiopia People's Democratic Movement Executive Committee, and the executive committee of the ruling party, EPRDF, as well. Does that mean Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn will stay as acting prime minister until the decision would be taken by the parliament and the CC of his party?
Now, what happened is he has expressed his willingness to resign. That doesn't mean that he automatically resigned. So according to the procedure, his resignation will be dealt with by the concerned party authority and the government. And then in due process, a new chairperson for the ruling party will be elected. And then the new prime minister will be appointed by the parliament. So he is now a prime minister and it will continue until he is replaced by a new prime minister.
Is there any timetable set by the ruling party to take next meeting, or be it an extraordinary meeting, to decide on this matter?
We expect that it will be in a very short period of time, but we cannot comment on the exact date when this happened, but we have to just wait for maybe a meeting that the ruling party may call that decision.
Minister of Communications of Ethiopia, Dr. Nagari Lencho, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Nangeri Lento is Ethiopia's information minister. He spoke with Solomon Abate of VOA's Amharic service. 3 years of anti-government protest in Ethiopia might be causing some divisions within the ruling Ethiopia People's Revolutionary Democratic Front Party, which has ruled Ethiopia for almost three decades. JP DeFarm is vice president of the Washington-based Atlantic Council and director of its Africa Center. He talked with Carol Castile, director of VOA's Current Affairs Programming, about the strategic importance of Ethiopia.
Ethiopia is very, very significant. Depending on whose numbers you take, it's either the second or third most populous country in Africa. We're talking 90 million people. It's also geostrategically located in the very fragile but important Horn of Africa region. It's a major contributor to United Nations peacekeeping. In fact, it's Ethiopian armed forces that are maintaining the fragile peace in certain parts between Sudan and South Sudan. Ethiopia is also a key U.S. counterterrorism partner over the years, especially in Somalia and the neighboring region. So very, very strategic country. And yet at the same time, there have been in recent years protests along religious lines, the Muslim community feeling aggrieved, but also large ethnic community. The Oromo community, which is arguably the largest ethnic group in Ethiopia, have had protests for a number of years. Now, these protests have been met with arrests, which the government will say is for terrorism or other crimes. The opposition will say they're political arrests. But what's breaking news this week and what has been very, very interesting is in response to the protests that you mentioned, the strike in the Oromo region, which is the region surrounding Addis Ababa, the capital, the government turned and released literally hundreds and not thousands of prisoners, some of whom have been held for a number of years. That's remarkably significant. Also significant, the dismissal of charges against other prisoners, including the journalists, the Zone 9 bloggers who've been held for a number of years. So that's happened. So there's a lot going on. Where this all goes, we don't know yet. But I think it's very, very significant that this is happening. And the fact that the leader of the Oromo Federal Movement was released from prison this week, where he's been for almost 3 years. That's very, very significant.
JP DeFarm is vice president of the Washington-based Atlantic Council and the director of its Africa Center. He was speaking with Carol Castillo, director of VOA's Current Affairs Programming. The tiny country of Djibouti in the Horn of Africa will hold parliamentary elections on February 23rd this year. The country's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Renewal and Development, the oldest in Djibouti, says it will boycott the polls. Its president, Dahir Ahmed Farah, is in the United States to meet with U.S. officials and raise awareness about what he calls the Djibouti situation. He said the political landscape in Djibouti is totally controlled by the government of President Ismail Omar Guelleh, who has been in power since 1999. Farah tells me the February 23rd elections will not be free and fair because the government is both a player and a referee in the elections.
The situation in Djibouti is sad, both politically, socially, and economically. Djibouti is a country under dictatorship since its independence of 1977. There is no space for political activity, no space for economic freedom, no space for social activity, so to speak. The political landscape in Djibouti is totally controlled by the regime. The opposition is stifled. The civil society is suppressed. The human rights are violated. Djibouti is ranking at the bottom in the international indexes, such as the index of UNDP, the index of freedom of the press. The upcoming election, who will take place on February 23rd, 2018, are not free and fair. That's why we are boycotting them. And that's why we are trying to draw the attention of the outside world, especially the United States of America, who has a military base in Djibouti.
So you said the upcoming elections are not going to be free and fair. What do you mean they are not going to be free and fair?
I mean that the regime, the Minister of Interior, is organizing the election. At the same time, this minister is part of the regime who present its candidates. So the regime, the government, is both a referee and player, so to speak. The listing are not objectively made. The electoral personnel is close to the regime. and the results are not made objectively. There are riggings all along the process, the electoral process.
Djibouti is strategically located. As a result, sometimes countries like the United States and other powerful countries, they don't want to rock their boat. What exactly do you think, say, a country like the United States or any Western country can do to help your situation in Djibouti?
They can put pressure on the regime so that the democratic reforms that the regime agreed to can happen. It is in their interest. It is, of course, in our interest as the Djiboutian people, but it's also in their interest because the real stability is not a short-term one. The real stability is a long-term one. And if in Djibouti people remain poor, hopeless, I think that the stability will end and it won't be a good news for those power who are engaged in a strategic partnership with Djibouti. So we ask them to base their policy on the people, not on the regime.
There have been some political upheaval in some parts of Ethiopia. I'm sure you're following what's happening in Ethiopia. Can that happen in Djibouti?
It may happen. There is such a discontent in Djibouti because of all those things I am talking about, poverty, lack of freedom. There is such a discontent that, yes, people showed their anger in Djibouti in 2011, in February, just at the moment of the Arab Spring. Later in 2013, we took to the streets. Yes, there is a potential for protest and for popular action in Djibouti.
Dahir Ahmed Farah is president of the Movement for Democratic Renewal and Development, Djibouti's oldest opposition party. He spoke with me here in our Washington studio. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, February 16th. And Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. Cyril Ramaphosa is South Africa's new president after Jacob Zuma resigned following pressure from the ruling African National Congress, the ANC. Ramaphosa was sworn in on Thursday in Cape Town after he was nominated in Parliament without opposition. The new president is scheduled to deliver his first State of the Nation address today, Friday, a speech that Zuma was supposed to give earlier this month but was rescheduled. Despite his resignation, former President Zuma still faces a raft of corruption allegations. The South African Communist Party, an alliance of the ANC, said it welcomed Ramaphosa's election as a step in the right direction. Alex Masheho, the spokesman for the Communist Party, tells viewers Peter Clotty that Zuma's poor leadership caused a strain in relations between the ANC and the Communist Party.
The SACP congratulates ANC President Comrade Cyril Ramaphosa for his unopposed election as the State President of the Republic of South Africa. The first task he will have to prioritize is that of dismantling the parasitic networks that are surrounding our state entities and state-owned enterprises, and bringing to an end the problem of state capture and other forms of corruption. Obviously, there are high levels of unemployment, poverty, inequality, and social insecurity in South Africa. That must be the twin task, meaning that the twin task of dealing with the problems of corporate capture of our state and corruption in general is that of reducing and radically so the high levels of unemployment, inequality, poverty, and social insecurity. If we can deal with these problems, we will be able to move South Africa forward under his leadership.
Jacob Zuma resigned under enormous pressure from within the ANC, the Communist Party, as well as opposition groups. Did his actions strain the relationship, the alliance between the ANC and your party, the Communist Party?
Obviously, under the leadership of Jacob Zuma as the president of the ANC and the state of South Africa, alliance relations were strained instead of improving. At his election in 2007, there was widespread belief, even within the Communist Party, that he was a leader who would unite both the ANC and the alliance. Unfortunately, he divided both the ANC and the alliance. We've got to rebuild these relations, and Cyril Ramaphosa said he is committed to this task. We take him for his word, but we do not want to rely on an individual leader. We have got to do our best to rebuild alliance relations, particularly what the South African Communist Party wants, a reconfiguration of the alliance to avoid a similar situation that we experienced under the leadership of President Jacob Zuma. It is when we work together as a collective under the principles of collective leadership that we can prevent the problems we experience under Zuma's leadership.
What are your expectations of Cyril Ramaphosa's leadership, at least a year ahead of next year's election?
He has to restore the lost ground of confidence in the African National Congress. And that will require basically dealing with the problems of corporate capture of our state and other forms of corruption. It will also require dealing with the problems of class, gender, and racial inequality, and the problems of uneven development between rural and urban areas, and within urban areas between ivory tower suburbs and townships. It will require creating jobs, visibly so. If people begin to see progress, they will regain their confidence in the leadership of the ANC, and they will surely vote for the ANC overwhelmingly. But that requires the alliance between the SACP, the ANC, and the Congress of South African Trade Union to be restructured so that we are seen to be working together.
Alex Masheho is the spokesman for South Africa's Communist Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Cape Town. The government of Uganda has launched an inquiry into alleged mismanagement of funds meant for refugees. Hilary Onek, the minister in charge of refugees, says several officials working with the office of the prime minister, which is responsible for refugees, have been suspended as the investigation of corruption and mismanagement allegations goes on. Mugumi Davis Rakarinchi reports from Kampala.
While addressing journalists in Kampala this Thursday, Minister Onek referred to those involved in misuse of refugee funds as spoilers, meant to tarnish Uganda's reputation in helping those fleeing from violence.
There were allegations brought to us by individuals, by people who saw some maybe misdeeds here and there, and we call them whistleblowers. Allegations of misuse of food and cash interventions meant for refugees, bribery and trafficking of girls, that's refugee girls. We want to assure the country and our partners that no stone will be left unturned. We have zero tolerance on corruption and abuse of public funds. Whoever will be found to have been involved will be firmly dealt with in accordance with the law of the country.
Onek did not want to say how much money is under investigations. He says the government will investigate allegations of inflation, of refugee numbers and extortion from refugees by government officials.
We are taking the necessary steps to ensure that the investigations are carried independently and professionally. To this vein, we have Uganda Police, together with the international inspectorates from the World Food Programme and the United Nations, who are also carrying parallel independent investigation on the matter.
Onek says there's been an increase in number of refugees for the past 3 years. According to the UN Refugee Agency, the UNHCR, the population of refugees in Uganda rose from 400,000 in 2015 to about 1.4 million in 2017. The majority of refugees are from South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC. Others are from Rwanda, Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somalia. Onek says the influx of refugees is creating pressure on the already limited social amenities.
They go to our health centers for medical treatment. Their children go to our schools and so forth. The service is designed for a limited number of people. Now it is catering for about five times the number of people those services are catered for.
In the rate of development, Onek says there has been an increase of refugees fleeing conflict from the DRC in the past few months.
We are receiving approximately 3,450 people per day, daily, at our reception centers through Kisoro, Toroko, Hoima, Zombo districts, and other points.
Uganda's refugee policies have been hailed as one of the best in the world. But Onek says the best way to deal with the refugee problem is to resolve conflicts from countries where they come from. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the latest football world ranking released by FIFA on Thursday, as Tunisia occupies the number one spot in Africa, assuming the 23rd position in the world, closely followed by Senegal in second, Congo DR is third, Morocco is in fourth, and Egypt wraps up the top five in that order. Germany, Brazil, Portugal, Argentina, and Belgium lead the pile of the top five football teams in the world in that order. Former Super Eagles of Nigeria coach Sunday Oliseh has said that he was sacked from his job at Fortuna Sittard because he refused to participate in legal activities at the club, a claim the club denied on Thursday. The 43-year-old was suspended on Wednesday for what the club said was unacceptable actions. In response, Sunday Oliseh claimed the club wanted him to violate the law. The football club are saying that they will be taking legal advice and looking to sack Oliseh. Dutch second-tier side Fortuna Sittard decided to suspend coach Sunday Oliseh following bad behavior by the coach. Staying with football news, the representatives of South Sudan engaged for the Interclubs 2018 season. Al Salam Wau and Al Hilal Juba have been eliminated for failing to show up for their respective matches of the first leg of the preliminary round of the CAF Champions League. CAF Deputy General Secretary Anthony Bafour said in a letter addressed to the South Sudan Football Association that Al Salam Wau FC and Al Hilal Juba are both considered losers, hence eliminated from the competitions they are engaged in respectively. Still staying with football news, FIFA faces scrutiny from human rights activists after allowing Egypt to select Chechnya as a World Cup team training camp site ahead of the 2018 Russia World Cup. Egypt's World Cup team will be in Grozny, the capital of Chechnya. It was selected by Egypt from a list of 67 options presented to the World Cup finalists. Human rights activists have expressed outrage at the decision by FIFA, with several governments alleging that the Chechen regime is complicit in political suppression, as well as discriminatory actions against women and sexual minorities. In women's football news, the South African under-17 women's team, the Bantwana, have arrived in Rabat, Morocco, to face the host nation on Saturday in the second leg of their second and final round of the 2018 FIFA under-17 World Cup qualifiers. The South Africans lead 5-1 from the first leg played at Dobbinsville Stadium on Sunday, February the 4th. And finally, South African national cricket team, the Proteas batsman Hashim Amla, believes the momentum one-day international ODI series loss to India has exposed key learnings for the squad going forward. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Cyril Ramaphosa is South Africa's new president after Jacob Zuma resigned following pressure from the ruling African National Congress, the ANC. Ramaphosa was sworn in on Thursday in Cape Town after he was nominated in Parliament without opposition. That is it for this Friday, February 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.